From Rockwired Sound in Albuquerque, New Mexico, of all places, this is Rockwired Radio Profiles with your host Brian Lush, exclusively at Rockwired.com. Today, Rockwired Profiles Portland-based rockers Miriam's Well and the electrifying CD Indians and Clowns. Stick around for more. Rockwired Radio Profiles is a production of Rockwired Media, LLC, a limited liability company. Please stand by. Welcome to another edition of Rockwired Radio Profiles, exclusively at Rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and the music is out there. On today's show, I'm falling in love with the city of Portland all over again. In the past couple of years, I've interviewed dozens upon dozens of bands from that city, and now I'm thinking about setting my sights toward the Northwest. Miriam's Well is a band that is starting to get a great deal of attention in that scene, and it's only a matter of time before things really get big for them. I had a chance to interview Miriam German and Mark Bowden of Miriam's Well, and you'll get to hear that in just a few minutes. From their CD Indians and Clowns, this is Miriam's Well with More Than I.
It's all that I
From their CD, Indians and Clowns, that was Miriam's Well with More Than I. Visit Miriam's Well at their official website, www.miriamswellmusic.com, and purchase their CD, Indians and Clowns, at www.cdbaby.com. I had a chance to speak with Miriam German and Mark Bowden of Miriam's Well over the phone. Here's how it went. Well, with the CD, Indians and Clowns out there for people to hear, how do you feel about the end result, now that all the work that has gone into making it is behind you?
You know, I've wanted to make a CD that is quintessentially me and my music with Mark my whole life before I knew Mark, and through it. And I've got that record now. You know, we made it. Now we get to make another one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've got nothing to say about it except that it's perfect for what we wanted.
How long did it take to make this one?
3 years.
Wow, you had a lot of time. Or was that just, you know, finances or just, you know?
No, it wasn't really finances. We decided, instead of making one record, to record 23 songs. So instead of stopping with, let's say, 9 or 12 that could have been the record, we just went for it and recorded all of them. So then we had 23 tunes and had to choose what we wanted for the record, and then Mark had to edit it. And it took a really long time to get just right. We added parts along the way, and it wasn't really 3 years. It was more like 2.5 years.
I see.
Yeah.
And talk about how music began for you. How did that start?
You know, I was compelled to listen to music when I was little, really little, the radio, and just wanted to dance to it, wanted to feel it. And then learned piano when I was a kid, and learned guitar when I was a young teenager, and started writing songs then. And then later on, I ended up writing a lot of songs playing in Harvard Square in Boston. I made my living like that, playing in rock clubs as a solo artist. And occasionally I'd have a band, but mostly it was just me. And then, you know, things started to happen on the East Coast, and then they weren't happening on the East Coast, so I moved to the West Coast. And eventually I met Mark, and we put this whole thing together, and it was just right. I'd never had a partner I could write with, and I can write with him. It's as easy as breathing. So then we made this.
And what is it that you think Mark brings to this project, you know, musically and personality-wise, that makes it work, that makes it easy?
Well, first of all, he's really fun. Secondly, he's really, really, really brilliant when it comes to music. And he knows a lot. And I know what I know, but he knows, like, volumes. And he also knows how to record, how to produce, how to edit, you know, the whole thing. So we have an ease together, which again helps us write and play together. Again, like we're breathing. But man, without him, I really don't know that I could have had the album that I've always dreamed of. And he has the same dream. It might be, you know, a variation on a theme, but it's basically the same. We're coming from the same place with the same kind of music that we both love, and it just happened that way.
How did the two of you meet?
Craigslist.
Awesome. No dark smoky bar or nothing. Craigslist.
No smoky bar. Craigslist and a phone call. And I was looking for a new lead player and put an ad out, and he answered the ad, and I knew on the phone. I just hung up the phone and said, that's my guy, you know. And when we met, he had also never met anybody he could write with, and we found that out, you know, within hours of meeting, that we can do that. So it was pretty cool. Yay, Craigslist.
Explain, if it can be explained, how the creative process works between you two guys. How do you guys go about writing a song?
Well, I think I got it down to three different ways, because I thought about this. One way is I'm at my house just doing my thing, writing, you know, just I have a melody, I have a tune, I have something I'm doing on the guitar. Maybe I'll write most of the tune, and then I'll take it to him and go, literally, I'll go, okay, now, fix it, make it better, you know. And he'll take it, he'll add a bridge, he'll add a chorus, he'll take the chords that I've done, he'll make them better, you know. So that's one way. He doesn't do lyrics, I'm the lyricist. And another way is he'll just start playing, and I'll start spitting out lyrics. And another way is we do it together. We just do it, you know, kind of simultaneously. But it's usually one of those. I think it falls in there.
I see.
We've never had an experience. We've never had an experience where we haven't been on the same page musically. It's kind of, it's wild. I think it's wild to both of us.
Yeah, I don't think that was even the case for the Beatles, really.
Oh, I wish I knew.
Oh, yeah, I don't know either, really.
Yeah. I have a feeling it was pretty easy.
Yeah, probably.
They were brilliant. Yeah.
They were.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The album, the songs on Indians and Clowns, I mean, were they written specifically for this album, or do they come from different time periods?
We wrote all of those songs. In fact, we wrote almost 23 of the songs that we recorded, 9 of which are Indians and Clowns. We wrote them all in the same period of time. I think everything from Indians and Clowns was written in my kitchen, except for a couple that I wrote with Lee at Lee's house. But with Mark, we just spat them out over days. We just kept writing. I mean, it happened pretty fast.
And what songs off of Indians and Clowns resonate for you the most personally, and why?
Well, I don't know about which ones necessarily resonate more personally than another, you know, because they're all meaningful to me. Mark always jokes with me about how precious we songwriters tend to be, so I just give you a precious moment. I think, like, Indians and Clowns is a really special song because Mark had the music for that, and the music was going, and you could hear the music, and the story just unfolded. I don't do storytelling all that often. I usually draw from either personal experience or some kind of experience that could be personal, even if it didn't happen to me, rather than a story. And this crazy story came out with Indians and Clowns, and I loved it. More than I, that was a pretty big deal for me. I was looking out into the garden and just really seeing that everything out here, everything that's beautiful is really more than I, and more than I can ever, and then there was no words, just more than I can ever. It was a big experience with that song. The music was big, and Stay was powerful too. That whole concept of, you know, you got a new relationship, you're going to make it work, you're not going to make it work. Is he or she going to stay, or are they not going to stay? You know, maybe they will stay, maybe they won't stay, and it keeps going back and forth like the song is, you know. What's another one on there? Oh, War No More. Very meaningful to me. I grew up a pacifist, and I went to a Quaker school. We're not Quakers, but, you know, that was a big deal. So War No More was kind of taken from my past with knowing all about Pete Seeger and his stories, and Woody Guthrie and his stories, and all of that from my early folk music experience, pulling that in and writing War No More. So, Waiting on a Plane, I was powerful, and you know, as far as how what I feel about hunger and people being hungry and governments not coming through to get food to their people. It's intolerable to me, you know. So I think, I mean, I could keep going. I'm trying to think what else is on there. Did You Know That? What a pretty little love song, you know. I have a special place in my heart for those. So that's personal that way, too. Anyway, I think they're all personal to me. I can't really separate them and go, oh, that's just a tune. I like them all.
I see.
Yeah.
And how have audiences reacted to the music in a live situation? How has that gone?
They go nuts. I can't believe it. Mark and I really weren't sure how this music was going to go over, because it's not, I'll probably let Mark talk to you more about that, but it's kind of not what's being done right now. You know, it's pretty big. It's sort of old school rock in a lot of ways, and we really didn't know how it was going to. It's just like we're in part of the indie capital right here in Portland, and people love it. I'm so glad that they're receiving it the way they're receiving it. It's a powerful show. We're big on stage. We have a great time. We're loud. It's energy from the start to the finish. You know, people can dance through the whole show. People scream. We just had a gig the other night at the Waterfront Blues Festival. People were screaming to us on the stage. I couldn't believe it. And it's high energy, really high energy, and it's infectious, apparently. People get it. They get the music, they get the performance, and they really want more. And I couldn't be happier.
Since the day you met Mark up until now, what has been the biggest surprise for you musically?
Well, I think that the level of songwriting has gotten so much better for me having him as a partner. You know, his abilities were in the beginning more advanced than mine. So he's been teaching me without teaching me, just, you know, through showing me what he does. That the songs are really going to a different level, a level I couldn't get them to before I met him. They were okay. You know, I mean, I didn't hate my music or anything like that, but when Mark touches it, it's like gold. So it's very different. It's incredibly different now. And the fact that people love our music like they do, and that we're being received like we are, that as well. That is a surprise.
What would you like someone to come away with after they heard Indians and Clowns, the album?
I think that... Oh, just after, like, not a live performance, but just listening to the album?
Yeah.
That they've been on a kind of like a musical journey. You know, there's a lot of texture, and it's not a flat experience at all. So I think one of the comments that I get often is from really young, like teenagers. Teenagers will go, "God, man, this is like the music in my dad's record collection. It's great." Because they're not familiar with it. For people who are in their, you know, 40s and older, they're like, "Yeah, man, that is, I've been waiting for this for a long time." And people who just are somewhere in the middle, they just to get it, just to feel it and experience the music just on, you know, from the CD itself. And I think from what we've been hearing, that's what's been happening.
What do you think is next for you and Mark musically? I mean, I know you said that you're starting a new album, but... what kind of direction?
I think we're going to be going in a similar direction, where we really both love big music, big production like this album. So I think the album is going to be, the next album is going to be similar. In fact, it's going to be very similar, but the songs are going to be completely different. You can tell on Indians and Clowns too. I mean, it's 9 songs, but each one is sort of its own. I don't know if you feel that way or not, but I feel that way, and yet they blend. So the next one is going to be similar to this. It's going to be another rock album, a lot of tracks, just different songs, and maybe even more rock. I'm not sure. Maybe more funk. I don't know just yet. But we have some tunes that we've got tunes with horns in them, so that's going to repeat. And I think more of the same.
Visit Miriam's Well at their official website, www.miriamswellmusic.com, and purchase their CD, Indians and Clowns, at www.cdbaby.com. Here is Miriam's Well once again with the title track of their latest CD, Indians and Clowns.
now that Indians and Clowns is out there for people to hear, how do you feel about the end result?
Well, I'm very happy with it. I think we achieved what we set out to do, and that's the key thing. I love the way it came together, from the recording to the mixing, the mastering. We got great performances from all the players. Everybody stepped up. It was just a sort of a magical journey. I'm very pleased with it and very proud of it. So,
talk about working with Miriam and what it is you think she brings to the table that makes it work, musically and personality speaking.
I would really just say one thing, which is authenticity. I think this, people feel this on the record, and I definitely think they feel it in the live situation, is when you hear her voice, there's no technical editing or anything that was done to that voice. You're hearing that voice, her voice, as it went down. Of all the things in the record, the thing that I touched the lightest was her vocal track. And so you're hearing that emotion. It's in the track. It's the way it is. It's honest. It reaches out and grabs you. I mean, she sings full on, just full emotional commitment. And that's, you can't invent that. That's not something that you can build into a record, build into a performance. By, you either have it or you don't, and that's really what people respond to. When a record really grips somebody, or a song or anything like that, a performance grips somebody, they're really responding to the emotion of it. It takes them on an emotional journey, and that to me is what the magic is all about. I sensed it right away with her, right from the get-go. So that's our key ingredient.
How did music begin for you?
Oh boy, I started listening to music. I was exposed to music at a really early age. Just I grew up at the tail end of the vinyl generation, so I remember vinyl, and just the sound of it. But my early listening experiences were actually not pop radio. I wasn't aware of pop radio at all. It was all classical and very sort of oddball stuff. We'd gotten a stack of vinyl from a family friend, and I grew up just listening to that. And then when I was in school, somebody turned me on to pop radio, and I was like, oh, what's this? I'd never heard of pop, like, the Top 40, Casey Kasem Top 40, that's a new experience. This is cool. So, started out that way, and then the first time I picked up a guitar, it was like a bolt of lightning. I knew exactly what I wanted to do, and it never changed. You know, it's always like, this is the thing that spoke to me. This was my voice. And music to me is the way emotions come out. Like, I hear music, you know, I can hear a set of chord changes and I can attach emotions right to those chord changes very, very easily. You know, some people do it looking at a painting. Me, it's through my ears. So,
I see. And what drew you, I mean, earlier you said you're an East Coast guy, but what drew you to, what drew you to Portland?
Bit of a story, but the short story is I've had family that's lived out here for years, and I had been living in Boston, living and working in Boston. I was sort of one of the go-to guys in town for singer-songwriter types, and I'd been number of people I worked with. I'd done probably one or two records a year for the last 10 or 15 years, but most of the people I'd worked with had moved out to the West Coast. It was not, I love Boston. It's a great place to start something, to workshop something, to put it together, but if you really want to make a living at it, you need to go, it's really either the West Coast or Nashville or New York. And I love the West Coast. It was, do I want to live in L.A. or do I want to live here? And when it comes to starving musicianship, Portland is a much more friendly town than L.A. I love L.A. and we do a lot of work down there, but it's actually, it's like flying from Boston to New York. It's a hop, skip, and a jump. The quality of life is here, and we can get a lot of work done. And if we need to go down to L.A. like we did on the mixing and the mastering, it's just a quick flight down. So I didn't find my real musical partner until I came out here. As she said, it was a Craigslist ad, and that's the way it came together.
And you're surrounded by a very wonderful, dynamic music scene in Portland anyway.
This is a great town. You got to have your game on in this town. This is not... people know what they're doing. When I first got here, I started going out to clubs and just watching the way people worked on stage and what they were doing, everything from the performances that they were giving to just the mechanics of getting on and off stage to all that stage business. And I realized this is a top-flight town. And I've been here for about 4 years, so when I first got here, that whole sort of Shins, Decembers kind of chamber pop thing was really taking off, and this was sort of ground zero for that. So it's a great city. We have great players to pull from. I love this city. Musically, it's great.
What songs off of Indians and Clowns resonate for you the most, and why?
Ooh, tough call. I would say the stuff that speaks to me the most is Did You Know That? Because I know sort of where the source is, where I was going for. I was trying to do a kind of get to an old Beatles, George Harrison kind of vibe, and just sort of the slide guitar parts and the chord structures and the way Miriam wrote the melody just really speak to me. The other one that really hits me, actually there are two more, I'd say secondly would be More Than I, because I was envisioning this sort of, again, a Beatlesque thing of like an Abbey Road style thing crossed with While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and it just hit it for me. Like the whole song just hit that way for me. And last but not least would be War No More, just because I think it's a great up-tempo thing. The lyric is a great lyric. I stand behind it. Even though I didn't write it, I would stand behind that 100%. The horns, just the whole vibe. It's all about, for songs, it's the way they it's all about the vibe of the song, how they work, the mood that they make and the story that they tell.
What do you think is next musically for you and Miriam?
Good question. We, like she was saying before, we actually have over 10 songs from the last recording sessions that I'm slowly working my way through. We have a whole other record in the bag, and I'm actually quite attached to these songs. This next batch is easily as good as the last batch, and I don't want those to get lost, so I think a good chunk of those will become our next record probably next year. There's a bunch of sort of old school sort of Motown R&B stuff, a bunch of rock stuff, and just good solid songwriting. Like we really hit a when we started writing for this record, we really hit a hot streak, and stuff was just popping out. You know, we could write a song in 20 minutes. So I think that'll will definitely the rest of this batch will come out on another record. Then we've got more in the pipeline. She writes songs. She's probably good for a song or two a week at least. So material we're not short on.
What would you like someone to come away with after they heard Indians and Clowns?
The way I would answer that question is to say where we're looking back to. I think we both have a fondness for rock from the late 60s, like maybe 67 to 74. To me, that was a really key period in rock, in that you at that point in music, you were actually allowed to write songs with big heart-on-your-sleeve sentiment. It wasn't about necessarily being ironic and being hipster. You could just sort of say, this is how I feel. I feel strongly about it, and I'm going to sing it right to you. So it was very direct, very big. The productions back then were, like, you listen to some of the, you know, even the Beach Boys stuff, you listen to some of those layered productions are great. Like Brian Wilson's God Only Knows. It's just a wonderful sentiment, and it's put straight out there. No irony, this is how I feel. Some of the Beatles stuff, The Who, I was a great fan of The Who. The Who's next record is big, sweeping statements, and you know, that's what we respond to. Hopefully I'm answering this question, but that's what I want people to take away with this, is that it's okay to be direct, wear your heart on your sleeve, and be bold about it. You don't have to hide behind our irony, you don't have to distance yourself, you can just lay it right out there.
Visit Miriam's Well at their official website, www.miriamswellmusic.com, and purchase their CD, Indians and Clowns, at www.cdbaby.com. From their CD, Indians and Clowns, here is Miriam's Well once again with War No More. That's all the time we're going to have here at Rockwired Radio Profiles. A special thanks goes out to Miriam German and Mark Bowden of Miriam's Well and to Rhonda Brilliant of Rainmaker Media Group. Once again, visit Miriam's Well at their official website, www.miriamswellmusic.com, and purchase their CD, Indians and Clowns, at www.cdbaby.com. For Rockwired, I'm Brian Lush, and remember, keep your eyes forward, never look back, and make it up as you go. Rockwired Radio Profiles is a production of Rockwired Media, LLC, a limited liability company, and is available exclusively at rockwired.com.